The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall share with you information from various medical sources. The Mayo Clinic Health Letter, Functional Dyspepsia, a common, challenging stomach pain. You were certain it was an ulcer. In fact, you began avoiding rich or spicy meals altogether because of the burning stomach pain and discomfort they triggered. But testing revealed an ulcer wasn't present. Instead, the diagnosis was functional or non-ulcer dyspepsia. While not life-threatening, the symptoms of functional dyspepsia can significantly affect the quality of your life. However, most people with this condition don't seek medical care. No obvious cause. Functional dyspepsia and peptic ulcers can feel much the same, but unlike a peptic ulcer, which involves open sores that can be found in the digestive tract, functional dyspepsia involves recurring indigestion that has no obvious cause. Common signs and symptoms include a burning sensation or discomfort in your upper abdomen or lower chest, bloating, belching, and early feeling of fullness when eating, and nausea. Tests may vary. To begin the diagnostic process, your doctor will likely perform a physical exam. Blood tests may be done to help rule out other diseases that can cause symptoms similar to dyspepsia. One component to help with that diagnosis is endoscopy, in which a thin, flexible, lighted instrument, an endoscope, is passed down your throat so that your doctor can view your esophagus, stomach, and the first part of your small intestine, the duodenum. Endoscopy also allows your doctor to collect small pieces of tissue or biopsy from your stomach or duodenum to look for inflammation or cancerous growths. Last year, both the American College of Gastroenterology and the Canadian Association of Gastroenterology updated their guidelines for managing dyspepsia. Your doctor can determine whether an endoscopy is needed, but generally endoscopy is recommended in adults age 60 and older who have symptoms. A normal result on this test most often indicates functional dyspepsia. Endoscopy may also be done on adults younger than 60 who have alarm features such as weight loss, anemia, difficulty swallowing, or persistent vomiting, along with dyspepsia symptoms, but this is determined on an individual basis. If no abdominal results are found with endoscopy, a non-invasive breath or stool test to check for Helicobacter pylori, or H. pylori, bacterial infection may follow to guide the course of treatment. This test is also used for adults under 60 with no alarm features. Treatments that may help. If H. pylori is present, your doctor may recommend an antibiotic to eliminate the infection. For those who test negative for the bacterium, as well as for those whose symptoms persist after antibiotic treatment, the first line of treatment is to reduce stomach acid. This may be done using two different types of medications. First, proton pump inhibitors. These drugs reduce acid by shutting down the tiny pumps within stomach cells. Examples include Nexium, Prevacid, and Prilosec. Or H2 receptor blockers. These medications, including Pepcid, Zantac, reduce acid production by blocking histamine receptors in the stomach cells. If these options are not sufficient, medications that affect nerve endings in the stomach, such as low-dose tricyclic antidepressant, may be prescribed. Cognitive behavioral therapy also may be recommended as a way to cope with the symptoms and reduce the stress that may trigger stomach pain. Extracting new solutions. Because functional dyspepsia lacks a fully understood cause and its symptoms overlap with other gastrointestinal conditions, the diagnosis of functional dyspepsia can be challenging. Researchers continue to explore better means of clearly identifying it. A 2018 study looked at the use of capsaicin, an active component of chili peppers, for this purpose. Researchers found that a single capsule of capsaicin extract could fairly accurately differentiate people experiencing functional dyspepsia compared with other conditions that cause similar symptoms, including peptic ulcer disease, inflammatory bowel disease, and irritable bowel syndrome. Those with gastroesophageal reflux disease, or GERD, also responded differently if they did or did not have functional dyspepsia. People with known functional dyspepsia who took the capsules reported a higher level of sensitivity to the extract than did those who had other conditions. While it's a small, limited study, it's possible that avenues such as this could allow for clearer and less invasive means of diagnosing stomach pain, as well as different options. From the Wall Street Journal, How Do You Help Someone with Depression? By Elizabeth Bernstein. A person who is depressed needs as much support as someone suffering from other serious illness such as cancer. Yet depression often makes people isolate themselves. It can change their personality and sap their energy, and it can make them resistant to assistance. Nancy Burgoyne, a licensed clinical psychologist, discussed why even the most well-meaning offers of support sometimes go awry, and gave advice on how to help a loved one who is depressed. Dr. Burgoyne has been a therapist for more than 25 years and is the chief clinical officer at the Family Institute at Northwestern University in Chicago, where she oversees 170 therapists and teaches marriage and family therapy at the Center for Applied Psychological and Family Studies, the Institute's research partnership with the university. Here are excerpts from the interview. How can you tell if someone is depressed? Well, the usual symptoms include a change in sleeping pattern and appetite, feeling sad or less expressive, and an inability to concentrate, irritability, easily angered or tearful, no longer taking pleasure in things that were formerly pleasant, social isolation, negative or irrational thoughts. Typically, you will see a decay in communication, both in frequency and quality, as a person turns inward. There may be a deterioration in the person's self-care and follow-through and responsibilities, as well as an amplified sensitivity to conflict. My advice, if you observe these things for longer than a week or two, ask, I don't want to be intrusive here, but are you okay? You do not seem like yourself, and I wanted to check in. It can sometimes feel impossible to help. Why? Depression isolates. The depressed person tends to be more internally focused, and what they are hearing from themselves is a highly negative tune that does not motivate them to relate to others. They may hear thoughts like, people don't care, no one will put up with me or really wants to help me, or, if I tell you what I'm thinking, you'll reject me and think I'm crazy. And because depression is also a total mind-body experience, that makes it hard to concentrate or access energy or motivation to do simple tasks like bathe or be present during conversations. The depressed person struggles to participate socially. Next question. Is it possible to make a difference? Yes. Start by accepting that depression is a real illness. People do not snap out of it, and any suggestion that they do is shaming and reinforces the feeling of being misunderstood and invalidated. This breaks down trust. Next, let go of making it your responsibility for them to get better. Friends and family members can play an important role, but do not help when they make it their mission to fix the depressed person. Person does not want their family members to suffer or to need to perform for them. Finding a balance between care for self and care for others is especially important in the relationship with a person who's depressed. Next question. Are there things people do that are not helpful? People sometimes say things casually that are meant to be reassuring but ring hollow, such as, it's going to be okay, you'll be fine, or I'll call you tomorrow, but then they don't. Most people mean for these reassurances to be genuine, but there's a difference between a glib, it's going to be okay, as a way to wave the depressed person off, and genuinely communicating that it will be okay because you will be there for them. Other things that are not helpful include telling the person to just snap out of it, not understanding that depression is an illness and treating it casually, having the same expectations for your loved one that you would have if they weren't depressed. Also not helpful is letting the person ruminate. Research shows that social interactions that are overly focused on discussing problems or negative thoughts may be counterproductive. This can be a tricky balance to strike. Compassionate listening is helpful, but co-rumination is not. The difference is when you're really listening, the conversation moves forward. Next question, what is helpful? Ask your loved one. Not everyone needs the same support. Some people value encouragement. Some value instrumental support, a favor such as picking up milk. There is a way to be there for someone without putting pressure on them and without joining them in their focus or negative thoughts. Provide your presence, your acceptance, and distraction. Set a low-pressure agenda. Go to a movie. Cook together. Talk about your own life a bit. Ask about a topic that interests them. Respect when they have had enough. Next question. Depressed people often resist getting professional help. How can you encourage them to go? You can offer to help them find a therapist or encourage them to see their primary doctor, but harping on them is not helpful. They may feel ashamed when needing help, particularly men. They may need some time to come to terms with the fact that if they can't fix it on their own, if you have had an experience that you think might relate, you can offer it up. Next question, depression can be hard on relationships, especially couples, right? Yes, because the depressed person is unavailable. As a result, a number of things can happen. The person who is not depressed can become angry or hurt, or they may try to take over and be a superhero in an effort to be helpful. So many dynamics get set in motion that then the relationship needs help, not just the depressed person. The best way to address this is with a couple's therapist. A professional can help the couple work within limits that the depression presents while helping them stay connected and functioning. And the last question, should you leave your loved one alone if he or she pushes you away? The answer is not for long. Respect that the person with depression has limited capacity for engagement. Talk about this and establish an understanding. I respect that you want to be alone, but I don't want us to make the mistake of having you be alone too long. Then go back to the low-pressure agenda. If you suspect that someone is suicidal, ask. You will not give them the idea. I've never heard from anyone that they mind that question when it's asked directly and with care. The Harvard Health Letter, 5-Minute Fixes for Better Health. Taking on a new health regimen can be daunting. Accomplishing smaller tasks that contribute to health may be easier to achieve. You know what you're supposed to do. Exercise daily, ditch junk food, get more sleep, and stay vigilant about every aspect of your health. It's a nonstop commitment that seems like a major undertaking if you've fallen behind. But putting off a healthy lifestyle increases the risk of developing chronic disease and jeopardizes your independence. Rather than identifying big ways to improve your health and then procrastinating, focus on small tasks that won't overwhelm you. Try a quick fix once in a while, or all the time if it applies. The more you do, the better you'll feel. Exercise more. If scheduling a big workout is daunting, put a simple 5-minute workout on your to-do list. March in place, do some leg lifts, and do bicep curls with a couple of soup cans. Try exercising throughout the day during daily activities. For example, don't just walk across your house. Dance across, step lively, and move your arms around. When you brush your teeth, suck in your lower gut for 30 seconds, which activates your abdominal muscles and helps strengthen them. Or make it a habit to stand up twice. Each time you stand up, sit back down and then get back up. This helps strengthen your legs, abdominals, and hip muscles. Doing something rather than nothing, even small bursts of activity, like walking up a few flights of stairs or starting off the day with several minutes of calisthenics, leads to measurable health benefits. No one should ever think that an effort to move is not enough to count, says Dr. Aaron Bagish, Director of the Cardiovascular Performance Program at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Reduce your fall risk. Falls are a top cause of injury and death once we hit age 65, but a few five-minute fixes at home can help reduce your fall risk. For example, hunt through your house for loose rugs, floor clutter, electrical cords, and other fall hazards that you can remove. Keep pathways lighted by adding night lights throughout your home or replacing burned out light bulbs or rearrange a kitchen cabinet. Moving items you use frequently like plates, cups, and pantry staples to the lowest shelf. That way you won't need to reach up high, which may cause you to lose your balance. Get more sleep. Getting too little sleep, less than 7 hours per night, is associated with fuzzy thinking, a higher risk, fall risk, and irritability, according to sleep expert Dr. Lawrence Epstein, an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School. Inadequate sleep is also a risk factor for obesity, high blood pressure, heart disease, diabetes, and even premature death. What quick fixes can improve sleep? Take a few minutes to come up with a daily sleep schedule and figure out how to stick to it. Going to sleep and waking up at the same time each day anchors your circadian rhythm, the body's way of regulating when you get tired and when you naturally wake up, Dr. Epstein says. Other fixes, go to bed 5 minutes earlier each night if you need more sleep, or spend 5 minutes reading, meditating, or doing yoga to calm your body before bed. Challenge your brain. Challenge your brain in 5 minutes by doing something new. This encourages new brain cell connections, which can help protect your memory and thinking skills. Use a free app on your smartphone that teaches you new words in English or better, a new language. Use a free app to listen to a new kind of music. Take a new route to get where you need to go, or watch a short educational video online about a subject that's new to you, suggests Dr. Joel Salinas, a neurologist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Stay connected. Socializing wards off loneliness and isolation, which are associated with declining thinking skills, depression, heart attack, stroke, and early death. Take 5 minutes to stay connected each day. Call a friend, use a smartphone or computer app to video chat with a loved one, or strike up a conversation with workers in the grocery store, at the meat, seafood, or bakery counters. Or take 5 minutes to call a friend and plan a longer visit soon, lunch, a movie, or a walk. Protect your skin. Rough, dry, thin skin is prone to tears, infection, and wounds that are hard to heal. These risks can be reduced by rebuilding the skin's moisture barrier with an oil-based cream that's so thick it comes in a jar. Moisturizing is most effective after shower or bath. Keep moisturizer handy and slather it on after you've patted your skin dry. Alternate between moisturizing your arms and trunk one day, your legs and feet the next. Do some spring cleaning. Remove items in your cabinets that may pose a risk to health. Toss expired supplements or medications. Find out if they're still safe to use by checking with your pharmacist. Place them in a sealed plastic bag before throwing them away. Pitch foods in the fridge that have spoiled or are long past their use-by date. Get rid of junk foods, chips, cookies, and other processed foods. Meditate. Finally, take 5 minutes to meditate. It's a great stress reliever that helps lower blood pressure, decrease pain, and ease depression. You can even meditate throughout the day. Spend 5 minutes sitting quietly, focusing on breathing. When thoughts come to mind, decide to come back to them later, says Dr. Anthony Weiner, Director of Outpatient Geriatric Psychiatry at Massachusetts General Hospital. Ask the Doctor by Anthony L. Komaroff, M.D., Editor-in-Chief. Do hangovers damage the brain? Question. With the holidays coming, I may be tempted to drink more than usual, maybe enough to have a hangover the next morning. I'm wondering if a hangover could actually damage my brain. The answer. There have been a few scientific studies of that question. Recently, a team of scientists examined those existing studies involving over 1,100 people and came to some tentative conclusions, published online August 25th in the journal Addiction. First, here's how they defined a hangover: mental and physical symptoms experienced the day after a single episode of heavy drinking, starting when blood alcohol concentration approaches zero. So by definition, during a hangover, you are no longer inebriated. After reviewing 11 studies, the scientists concluded that during a hangover, the ability to focus is impaired. So their short-term and long-term memory, particularly long-term memory of things that occur during a hangover. Also impaired is something called psychomotor speed, the speed which the brain tells the body to move. This affects activities like driving a car. Indeed, studies of simulated driving in people who are suffering a hangover and therefore are no longer inebriated have found that driving is impaired. Could there be a lasting brain damage from recurrent drinking sufficient to cause a hangover? I could not find any studies of this question, but I think it's possible. So I'd be careful this holiday season. Is aspirin best for peripheral artery disease? Question. Is there something stronger than aspirin I can take for peripheral artery disease in my legs? Answer. People with peripheral artery disease, PAD, in the legs have blockages, plaques of arteriosclerosis, in the arteries that impair the flow of blood. Based on large scientific studies involving over 5,000 people with PAD, authorities recommend taking a daily aspirin tablet. For people with PAD, smoking cessation, regular exercise, and often other medications such as statins can help prevent further plaque buildup and decrease symptoms. What are the benefits of aspirin in people with PAD in the legs? Aspirin reduces the tendency of blood to clot. Interestingly, however, aspirin has not been shown to reduce the tendency of clots to form in their arteries of the leg or to improve blood flow in the legs. Indeed, the main reason for aspirin treatment has nothing to do with the legs. Instead, the rationale is that people with PAD often also have arteriosclerosis in the arteries in their heart and brain, but don't know it. A regular daily aspirin reduces the risk of having a heart attack or stroke. So, your doctor is not dismissing your condition by recommending a simple over-the-counter aspirin. You're getting good advice. Should you add foam rolling to your workout routine? Just a few minutes of rolling can help make your muscles more receptive to stretching and relieve muscle soreness, too. Working out regularly will help you hold on to your flexibility, mobility, and independence. And using a simple tool may improve the grip on fitness by priming the muscles and making your workouts more effective. The tool is called a foam roller. It looks like a fat tube or a bolster pillow for a bed. To use it, you slowly roll an area of your body, like your upper back, hips, or calves, back and forth across the top of the roller. Foam rolling seems to make muscles more receptive to stretching and moving. It's the best thing I've found to make people feel better immediately in the 25 years I've been doing this, says Michael Bento, a personal trainer at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Foam rolling benefits. Foam rolling helps release tension in the muscles, relieve muscle soreness, and improve flexibility and range of motion. It's not clear exactly how that happens. The current theory is that sustained pressure on the muscle signals the central nervous system to reduce tension, similar to the effect of a deep tissue massage, Bento explains. Releasing tension makes tight muscles more receptive to stretching. After foam rolling, you get about a 10-minute window of increased flexibility, Bento says. That enhances stretching exercises and helps you move better in a workout. Just roll with it. A personal trainer or physical therapist can help you determine which muscles will benefit from foam rolling and then guide you through the process. You'll typically sit or lie on a mat on the floor, place a particular body part on top of the roller, then move it back and forth until you find a tender spot in your muscle. Hold on that spot for 30 to 90 seconds until you get a reduction in tenderness. It's important to breathe deeply during that process to help relax the muscles. For example, to roll your calf muscle, sit on the mat with your legs in front of you and your hands behind you for support. Place one calf on top of the roller and move your leg back and forth over it. To roll your quadricep muscles on the front of the thigh, do a modified plank like a push-up propped up on your elbows while lying with your hips and thighs on top of the roller. Then move forward and backward over the roller. Who's a candidate for rolling? Bento says most people will benefit from foam rolling as part of a pre- or post-workout routine or simply as a quick break from sitting. The hip, shoulder, and ankle muscles can become very tight from long periods of sitting on a couch or at a desk, he explains. Rolling for just a few minutes can help loosen them. But foam rolling isn't right for people with open wounds, fractures, flare-ups of rheumatoid arthritis, deep vein thrombosis, advanced osteoporosis, or neuropathy that causes pain. Get your doctors okay before trying foam rolling. Then work with a personal trainer or physical therapist to learn how to use the tool and roll your way toward better health. Types of foam rollers. The most common foam rollers are cylinders made of firm, compressed foam. The rollers are usually 6 inches in diameter, range from 12 to 36 inches long, and cost between $10 and $30. Foam rollers come in different styles. Some have bumps or ridges on them. Some have gel inserts you can put in the freezer, and some vibrate. Rollers are also available in varying levels of firmness, color-coded to reflect whether they are soft, medium, soft or white, medium or red, blue, or green, or hard, they're black. You can also find smaller massage rollers with handles, like a rolling pin, which you can roll in various parts of your body, like the top of your thighs, and foam ball rollers that you can use while standing. Just place the ball between you and a wall, lean against it, and move your body over it. What's good for your heart is good for your brain, even later in life. A French study published in August 2018 in the Journal of the American Medical Association suggests that the more steps you take to boost your heart health, the lower your risk for developing dementia. Researchers evaluated health and lifestyle data for more than 6,000 men free of dementia and heart disease, men in their 70s, to see how they were doing when it came to following a seven steps recommended by the American Heart Association: not smoking, controlling weight, getting regular physical exercise, eating a healthy diet that included fish twice a week. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it, and I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. So long until next time, and if you have any comment or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.